Jacob, too, more than once had let Laban and Yitzhak win when he was wanting to put them in a good mood, but it never occurred to him that Joseph might have done the same. "It is true," he went on, "that I played badly today. More than once a thought came over me that made me forget the position of the pieces. What I was thinking had to do with the approaching feast and the night of sacrifice, when after sunset we slaughter the sheep and dip the sprig of hyssop into the blood to strike it upon the two side-posts that the avenger may pass over, for it is the night of the Passover, and the substitution of the sacrifice, in token that the firstling is slain in expiation for man and beast whom it lusteth him to slay. Upon all this I fell a-musing, for lo, a man will do much, and know not what he doth. Yet were he to know and think about it, it might be that his entrails would turn over within him, and he would be sick to his very bottom, as it hath happened to me many a time in my life. And the first time was when I heard that Laban, at Shinar beyond the river Prath, had slain his firstborn little son, as a sacrifice, and buried it in a jar in the foundations to bring good fortune to his house. But dost thou think it brought him blessing? No, but harm, hindrance, and adversity. And had I not come and given the little life to house and business, it would all have foundered in misery. Never again would he have been fruitful with his wife Adinah. And yet Laban would not have walled up his little son had such a deed not brought his forebears blessing in earlier times. Thou sayest it, Joseph responded. He had folded his hands at the back of his neck. And it is clear to me from thy words how this came to pass. Laban behaved according to outworn custom, and thereby committed serious blunders. For the outworn is repulsive to the Lord. He is already beyond it, and wisheth us to be so too, and he rejecteth and curseth it. Therefore, if Laban had understood himself and the times, he would have slaughtered instead of his son a goat or a kid, and struck the blood upon the posts and threshold. Then would he have been glad, and his incense would have mounted up to heaven. Again, said Jacob, thou sayest it, and takest the thoughts and the words out of my mouth. For the avenger lusteth not alone after the beast, but also after the blood of man. And we appease his desire not only in respect to the flocks, through the blood on the doorposts, but also by the sacrificial meal, which we eat and devour in haste by night, that nothing of the roast meat may remain over by the morning. But when we think of it, what sort of roast meat is that? And doth the lamb atone only for the flock when we slay it? What should we slay and eat if we were mad like Laban? And what was slain and eaten in more indecent times? Do we know what we do in the feast when we slay and eat? And would not our very inwards come uppermost if we thought of it, so that we vomited? Let us slay, and let us eat, said Joseph lightly in a high-pitched voice, rocking himself in his hands at the back of his neck. The feast and the feasting are both good, and if they are also salvation, then let us joyfully save ourselves from being obscene by dint of understanding the Lord and the times in which we are. Lo, there is a tree, he cried, and pointed with outstretched arm into the tent, as though a tree actually stood there. Splendid in trunk and crown, planted by the fathers for the delight of those coming after. Its tips move and sparkle in the wind. Its roots cleave to the kingdom of the earth, in darkness, in the dust, and among the stones. But doth the blithe tip know overmuch of the dirt-encrusted root? No, for it hath come out beyond it with the Lord, swayeth in the air, and thinketh not thereupon. So, in my view, is it with the tradition and the indecency. But if we want to have the pious tradition taste well in our mouths, by all means, let us leave the underneath things quietly underneath. Thy parable is charming, Jacob said, nodding. He stroked his beard, holding it at one side, and letting it glide through the hollow of his hand. Thy words are witty and well invented. But even so, we must still meditate, still stoop under the cares and the unrest which were Abraham's portion and must be ours for ever and ever, that we may free ourselves according to the Lord's will, and it may be are already free of that from which he would release us, namely care. But say, who is the avenger, and what is his passing over? Doth not the moon on the night of the feast go full and beauteous through the pass, which is the northernmost point and zenith of his way, where he himself turneth in his fullness? But the northernmost point is Nergal's, the murderer. The night is his. Sin ruleth for him. Sin is Nergal at the time of this feast, and the avenger, who passeth over, and whom we appease, he is the Red One.
That is clear, Joseph said. We hardly think of it, but so he is.
Such was the unrest, went on Jacob, that was distracting me as we played. For it is the stars that determine this feast for us, the moon and the Red One, and on that night they change places. But shall we then throw kisses to the stars and celebrate their histories? Must we not rather distress ourselves over the Lord and the time, whether we do truly and in fact understand them, and not transgress against both, considering that we continue out of sheer idle habit in the ritual indecency from which he would win us? Sometimes I seriously ask myself if I ought not to call the people together under the tree of wisdom, that they might hear my misgivings and hearken to my cares in the matter of the feast, Pesach.
My dear father, said Joseph, as he bent over and laid his hand on the old man's beside the board which registered his defeat, is much too precise in his interpretations. I must pray him not to let himself be moved to undue haste, and so to destruction. If thy child may regard himself as having been asked, then he would advise that the feast be spared, and not too hotly attacked on account of its legends, instead of which perchance another might come up, which then thou wouldst relate at the roast meal. For instance, the saving of Isaac, which would be very suitable. Or else we wait on time, whether God might not for once glorify himself in us by a great redemption and deliverance, which then we would make the basis of the feast and its legend, and sing songs of rejoicing. Have I, in my folly, spoken consolingly?
Thy words, responded Jacob, are like balsam, very sage and comforting, which is what I mean by balsamic. For thou spokest for the custom, and yet at the same time for the future, and that shall be reckoned to thy honour, and spokest at the same time for an abiding, which is at the same time a station on the way. And thereover my soul smileth at thine, Joseph L., thou shoot of the tenderest tree, let me kiss thee. And across the board he took Joseph's lovely head between his hands and kissed him, rejoicing in his son from the depths of his heart.
If only I knew, Joseph said, whence wisdom cometh to me at this hour, or the small sagacity I have to meet the shrewdness of my lord in his speech. Thou saidest that thy thoughts wandered during our game. Then, to be frank, so did mine. They kept slipping aside from the pieces, and the Elohim alone know how I managed to keep going on so long.
Whither then, my child, went thy thoughts?
Ah, answered the youth, thou canst easily guess. A word of thine itcheth in mine ear day and night, a word which my father spoke of late to me by the fountain, and which hath robbed me of peace, so that curiosity plagueth me wherever I go. For it was a word of promise.
What said I then, and what promise gave I to thee?
Oh, thou knowest! I can tell by thy face thou knowest. Thou hadst in mind, so saidst thou. Well, canst thou guess now?
I purpose to give thee somewhat to make thy heart rejoice, and which will be fitting unto thee. Thus word for word didst thou speak. I remember it only too well. It keepeth on tickling me in my ear. What then did my little father mean with this promise of his?
Jacob reddened, and Joseph saw it. It was a slight rosy flush which ran up into the gray hair on his cheeks, and his eyes clouded over in mild confusion.
It was nothing, nothing at all, he said defensively. My child is indulging in vain imaginings. What I said was mere chance, uttered without purpose or significance. Have I not given thee various things, as my heart prompteth me? Thus, then, was the meaning of what I said, that I might give thee something some day, at a fitting hour.
Nay, and indeed, Joseph cried, sprang up and embraced his father, this wise and good man who sitteth here cannot speak without meaning. That would be unheard of. As though I had not seen plain and clear as he spoke, that he spoke not emptily, but had a plain thing in his mind's eye, beautiful and definite, not just anything at all, but some particular and splendid thing which he thought of for me. But not only hast thou thought of, thou hast spoken and promised. May I not know what is mine, and what awaiteth me? Dost thou think I could find rest or give thee any peace until I knew?
How thou teasest me, said Jacob, hard-pressed. Shake me not so, and take away thy hands from the lobes of mine ears, that I may not look like a child in thy hands. Thou wouldst know. Well, why shouldst thou not know? I will tell thee. I will admit that I did have one clear thing in my mind, and not anything indefinite. Hearken then, and stand down upon the ground. Hast thou heard of Rachel's ketonet pasim?
A garment of mommy's? Something she wore? I understand. Thou wilt make me from her robe.
Hearken, Joseph, thou dost not understand. Let me tell thee. When I had served 7 years for Rachel, and the time approached when I should receive her in the Lord, Laban spoke to me, I will give thee a veil, wherein the bride may veil herself and dedicate herself to Nana, and be a consecrated one. Long ago, he said, I bought the haik from a pilgrim, and preserved it in the chest, for it is precious. It is supposed to have belonged to a king's daughter in times past, and been the maiden garment of a princess, a thing easy to believe, so skillfully is it embroidered everywhere with all sorts of emblems of idols. But she shall veil her head in it, and be as one of the Enitu, and like to the bride of heaven in the tower Ete Menanki. In some such words spoke the devil Laban to me, and lied not in these words which he spake, for Rachel received the garment, and was a splendor incomparable in it, as we sat at the wedding feast, and I kissed the image of Ishtar. But when I handed the bride the flower, and lifted her veil that I might see her with my seeing hands, lo, it was Leah, whom the devil had craftily brought into the bedchamber, so that I was happy only in my imagination, but not in the fact. All which maketh one to lose one's reason to think upon, so I pass it over. But at the time I was glowing in the sun of my fancied bliss, and I folded the sacred weave, and laid it upon a chair, and to the bride I said, we shall hand it down through the generations, and countless blissful brides shall wear it.
And did Mommy, too, wear the wrap at her time?
It is no wrap. It is a sumptuousness, a piece of material to be used as one will, ankle length, with sleeves, and one can put it on as suiteth one's taste and one's looks. Mommy... yea, she wore it, and kept it. When she went away, when we broke the dusty bolts and swindled that devil Laban, She faithfully packed it up and took it with her. Always it went where we went, and as Laban preserved it for years in his chest, so have we done.
Joseph's eyes darted about through the tent and rested on the coffers. He asked, "Is it close to us?"
"Not far off."
"And my lord will give it me?"
"I have designed it for the child."
"Designed and promised?"
"But for later, not this very minute," cried Jacob in his distress. "Be reasonable, child, and let it stop for the moment at the promise. Lo, things are in the balance, and the Lord hath not yet pronounced upon them in my heart. Thy brother Reuben fell away, and I was driven to take from him his right as firstborn. Is it then thy turn next, that I should give thee the right to array thee in the Ketonet?" One might say no, for after Reuben came Judah, and then Simeon and Levi. One might answer yes, for after Leah's firstborn fell and was cursed, then came the turn of Rachel's firstborn. But all that is doubtful and unclear. We must wait and let the signs make it plain to our understanding. But if I garb thee in the Ketonet, then might the brethren falsely interpret it in the sense of the blessing and the choice, and rise up in jealousy against thee and against me.
"Against thee?" asked Joseph in great astonishment. "I almost think that my ears deceive me. Art thou not our father and our lord? If they murmur, canst thou not rise up and overwhelm them with thy words, and say unto them, 'I choose whom I choose, and show favor to whom I show favor. Who are ye that ye oppose me?' Sooner than any of you will I clothe him in the garment and with his mother's ketonet pasim. But I think not that mine ears deceive me. They are young and keen, and especially when my dear father speaketh, I prick them up. Saidest thou once to the bride, 'Countless ones among beloveds shall wear it,' or saidest thou not? Tell me then, who, saidest thou, shouldst wear it?"
"Be quiet, tempter. Leave me, and coax me not, that thy folly may not overflow and fall upon mine own head."
"Dear father, let me see it."
"See it? Well, seeing is not having, but seeing is wanting to have. Be reasonable."
"Shall I not see what is mine and promised unto me? Shall we make a bargain? I will sit here and not stir from the spot. Then thou goest and showest me the festal garment, holding it up before thee as the merchants in the bazaar at Hebron display their wares and drape the cloth upon themselves before the eyes of him who coveteth it. But he is poor and cannot buy, so then the merchant putteth it away again."
"So be it in the name of the Lord," said Jacob. "Although an onlooker would think thou tookest liberties with me. Stop where thou art, squat upon thy heels, put thy hands behind thee. Then shalt thou see that which, perhaps, under certain circumstances, might be thine."
"What is mine already?" Joseph cried. "Only that I may not yet enjoy it."
He rubbed his eyes with his knuckles to see the better. Jacob went over to the round-topped coffer, slipped the bolt, and flung back the lid. On top were woolen things, mantles, covers, skirts, headcloths, smocks, which he dropped, folded, on the floor in a pile. He found the veil where he knew that it lay, took it, turned round, and spread out the folds. The lad stared in amaze. He drew a long breath through his open, laughing mouth. The metal embroideries glittered in the lamplight. The flashing silver and gold blotted out at times the quieter colors as the old man held it up in his unsteady arms. The purple, white, olive green, rose color, and black of the emblems and images. The stars, doves, trees, gods, angels, men, and beasts, lustrous against the bluish mist of the background.
"Ye heavenly light!" Joseph burst out. "How beautiful! O dearest father, merchant, What showest thou to thy customer there under thy arch? There is Gilgamesh, with the lion in the bend of his arm. I recognize him from here. And there is a man fighting with a griffin, and swinging a club. Wait, wait! Ye heavenly hosts, what animals are here? I see the paramours of the goddess, bat, steed, wolf, and bright-colored bird. Let me look. Oh, let me look! I cannot make out, I cannot distinguish, and my eyes burn from staring across such a distance. Is that the scorpion-human pair with the prickly tails? It seemeth so, but I cannot be certain, though mine eyes water with staring. One moment, merchant, while I hitch a little nearer, still with my hands behind my back. But, oh, ye Elohim, how it groweth in beauty as I come nearer it, and all becometh clear. What are the bearded spirits doing at the tree? They are fructifying it. And what is it that is written here? I have put off my coat. How shall I put it on? Wonderful! Always Nana, with sun, moon, and dove. Oh, I must stand up. Merchant, I must get up, else I cannot see the top. The date palm, out of which a goddess stretcheth her arms with food and drink. I may touch it, may I not? There is no charge, I hope, if I lift it up ever so carefully in my hand, to feel its weight and its mixture of lightness and heaviness. Merchant, I am poor, I cannot buy. Merchant, give it to me. Thou hast so many wares. Give me the veil, or be so kind to lend it me, that I show myself to the people to the honor of thy shop. No, thou wilt not. Thou art adamant. Or waverest thou perhaps a tiny bit, and despite all thy severity, wouldst like to see me in it? No, I am wrong. Thou swayest a little only from the holding up and spreading out. Thou hast strained thyself much too long already. Give it to me. How doth one wear it? How put it on? Like this? Or like this?